AG1 is a comprehensive and convenient blend of over 70 high-quality ingredients. And what that means is each morning when I wake up, before I do anything else, I drink AG1 to set me up for the day. It keeps me clear-headed, full of energy, and focused on whatever I need to do, like writing the fighting cock, for example. One scoop, once a day, before breakfast, and that's it. I've actually found that I've not been needing coffee in the morning to get me started. I've still been drinking coffee, because I love coffee, but it's not because it's like a necessity to do so. AG1 is made out of the highest quality ingredients subject to the strictest manufacturing standards. AG1 is NSF certified for sport, and this process involves exhaustive testing and verification that every serving of AG1 is exactly what you see on the label. If you want to take ownership of your health, try AG1 and get a free 1 year supply of vitamin D and 5 free AG1 travel packs for your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/thefightingcock. That's drinkag1.com/thefightingcock to get started. And to help the podcast. Thank you very much. Have a great day and enjoy the show.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Cock. It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Cock.
A camel turnip.
Hello and welcome to the Fighting Cock, season 12, episode 19. Big John Bass in for Flav, joined by Felonious Filth.
Hello, hello.
And Rab C. Nesbitt, aka Mark. How are you, Mark?
Great.
You're right. You've got a lot of nicknames, I've realised, in the group. You've basically had what? Matt Nasbat.
Matt
Rab
Nasbat,
C. Nesbitt, the butcher, the baker, the monk shagger. There's quite a lot of nicknames. Did you ever have nicknames in school? Or is this like the first time you're getting nicknames?
I did, but they were probably, I mean, they were more about, you know, ginger hair, being really skinny, being short. So I don't know if that's better or worse. I mean, it's probably worse, actually. Yeah.
It's quite a lot.
They've improved with age.
Yeah. You've got quite a lot of markers for bullies, I think. A lot of indicators for them to get stuck in, which never helps.
I think so. I'm biologically, I was already struggling, you know, so. We got the hashtag biology in there, didn't we, John? But you know, I put myself out there as well. I don't help myself, so.
You've blossomed into a fine young man. So that's a good thing. Right, I'm skirting around the issue, which is that we played Liverpool at the weekend. We didn't win. It was a second home defeat on the spin. Personally speaking, and I'm obviously going to get both your takes on this, that, in a weird, very perverse way, it's probably the most optimistic I've been about the future of Spurs all season. I know that people aren't happy when we lose. I'm not happy when we lose. I'm not saying, oh, don't worry, we played well, that's all that matters. But I think, as I've said many times, I do care about the way that we play. And despite not getting the result in this game, I can see that with all the things stacked against us, if we could play like that with better players, and recruitment's a big part of that, there's definitely something there that I wasn't sure we had. There was a level, the way that we were playing there, and there were circumstances around that I just didn't think we had. So I came out of that game annoyed at the result, but kind of optimistic. So I just wanted to see and kick things off. T, let's hear what you thought, mate. I felt optimistic after this.
I mean, I've been optimistic all the way through, really. I think Conte is kind of making do with the squad and the players that he has. You can't legislate for errors, which is what led to the second Salah goal. But I didn't come away from yesterday disappointed or angry in any way. It was just, it was awful to lose. I don't think the first half was that bad. I feel like some sort of weird apologist, but I think we've had a lot worse first halves than that. It's just that Liverpool were clinical. So we take a while to get started, which has been well documented. I think we've been behind in our last seven games, I believe, at halftime. So, so you've got someone like Salah, who's one of the best strikers the Premier League has ever seen. He's not gonna, you know, pass up those chances. Maybe lesser strikers might have panicked with the second goal and, you know, maybe blasted it over the bar, but Salah had the composure to punish Dyer's mistake. But no, I didn't come away from yesterday's game particularly upset. It's just that Conte keeps saying, be patient. You know, you've got to wait a few more windows to, you know, see what he can do. And I believe he's earned it. I mean, getting us into the Champions League, getting us in the top of the group. You know, we're looking like we're going to be fourth going into the World Cup. I think there's a lot to be optimistic about. And I feel that, you know, in January, we continue to build. I don't think we're going to have another January like last year. We've got Kulusevski and Bentancur, but I believe that we're still going to get the building blocks in place for Conte to get to where he can get to, which would be, you know, winning trophies and competing for the league.
Yeah, absolutely. Mark, how did you feel after the game, mate? Because I think it was a bit of a roller coaster of emotions during it. But now, you've had a bit of time to process it. How do you feel about the result?
Ultimately we lost, and it was 3 points that I thought it was very possible for us to get a point, and I thought it was even, you know, also possible to win. So to not win was sucks. But like you said, I think it's one of the defeats that sort of you come away thinking, do you know what, we didn't do too bad. And again, absolutely, the pattern, first half shit, second half good, repeat itself. But yeah, look, I thought there were so many, even in the first half though, like you said, like we didn't look that bad. Even though Liverpool did hammer us, it felt like a classic Liverpool game. You know, I think they had 60+% possession in the first half. So we did get hammered a little bit. But it was a dire total brain fart for the second one. And for the first Salah goal, I thought there was way too much space for both Nunez to assist Salah, who was just totally open in the middle. So I didn't think it was like a really poor team performance in the first half that led us to being 2-0 down. And then in the second half, we battered them in second half. We had three of our four big chances came from second half. I came away from second half feeling like this is something we can build on. And don't forget, two of our three best attackers were not playing. We only brought Kulusevski on 20-odd minutes to play. So we can't feel too down, although it obviously fucking sucks, and especially sucks losing to Liverpool, right? We always lose to those cunts.
Yeah, yeah, no, for sure. And I think you touched on something there, that there is context around this game. Like, we always lose to Liverpool, it's annoying. But usually I feel like we go into those games and there's like, not necessarily always form with it, because Liverpool have been a very good side of recent years, but we feel like we've got a chance here. This was the first game in a while when I was looking at it and thinking, I know they've been out of form, they haven't won away all season, but we are missing a lot of players, and particularly attacking players. We know we've still got work to do in terms of like recruitment, a World Cup round the corner that players are focused on. All of these factors are sort of adding up. So when you saw the lineup, when you saw the lineup with Perisic up top with Kane, were you concerned? Did you write the game off? Were you thinking he's not really got much option? What did you think about the lineup when you saw it come out?
I just thought he didn't have many options. You know, I think a lot of the fans would have liked to have seen Brian Hill given a run, and you know, not Royale at right wing back. But I think we're kind of consigned to seeing Royale at right wing back and anyone but Brian Hill up front. I think Moore was carrying an injury, so he wasn't going to start the game. But I saw the lineup and I thought, well, you know, we've got the 3-5-2, we've got the midfield kind of blocked out. And I thought, well, we've got a chance. I think I spoke to Mark before the game and I said, I could see it being a draw, and probably should have been a draw looking at the contrast of the game. It probably could have been a draw, even a Spurs win. But I saw the lineup and I thought, well, I could see what you're trying to do, trying to contain them. But I don't think containing teams like Liverpool is helpful when you've got defenders who are prone to making errors and a wing back who doesn't attack in Emerson Royale, and Sessegnon's form is kind of on a bit of a downward trajectory over the last few weeks. I mean, he got the goal against Bournemouth, which got us back in that game, but I think his confidence is kind of very, very low. I mean, it was nice to see him get an ovation as Sessegnon came off, but it wasn't one of his better games yesterday. So with that backdrop, I kind of thought, well, we could still grab a draw. It wasn't like daggers at Conte when I saw the lineup.
Yeah. Mark, did you think there was much, given the injuries and status of the squad, did you think there was much he could have done differently in hindsight?
I mean, no, he didn't have many options. There were other things he could have done. He could have still, you know, he could have put Lucas in and Perisic as the left sided striker and played a 3-4-3. But it would have been probably too attacking for his liking, I think. But I think we said that in the preview. There were a few options in there, and you could have played a 3-5-2 with Lucas instead. But again, that would have been fucking dreadful. Ultimately, I thought he did well. I mean, it was less of a 3-5-2 and more of a 5-3-2, so more defensive than we probably would have liked it to be. But as T said, he's got Sessegnon and Royale acting as our fullbacks in that sort of sense. So again, not great. Although actually, I was torn about Sessegnon yesterday because I thought at times he had Alexander Trent gone on or totally on toast, and it should have been a pen. I'm sure we come back to that.
Yeah.
But even the free kick outside the box as well, he rounded him several times, and Trent had to foul him. So yeah, I mean, but up front, look, I thought it was interesting to see Perisic in a position that we haven't seen him in so far. And I think he did really well. I think it was probably his best game in a Spurs shirt, which just says a lot about the character and the capabilities of this man who can play at an elite level at so many positions around the pitch. So I thought it was positive for those factors.
Yeah, I think with Perisic as well, like the thing that we all are aware of is his age and the fact that he doesn't, you know, he can't necessarily, like, he's not going to be able to sustain that playing every single game at that level. But what he does is that he really does have the experience to be able to just adapt. And I thought he was really good, like, considering he probably has not played there for a long time. I know he's done it at international level on occasion, having to play like right at the top of the pitch. I thought he played really well in that position. And then when he had to change position, we still got a lot of output out of him. So I think he did really well. I think the wider issue outside of selection, and maybe these two things are linked a little bit, is this idea of the sort of second half Hotspur. And we had a question from John Howick who said, should we tell our players we kick off an hour earlier so we actually start games properly instead of in the second half? I think there is, I think now it's pretty well kind of known that this isn't just like a coincidence anymore. There's like obviously some tactic around this idea of like saving energy, whatever it is. But to your point, T, I'm not sure that this is making much sense at the moment, because I feel like when we've come out and had to play because we've gone a goal down, we've looked so much better being on the front foot to the point where we're forcing teams back. Now, I get the argument of, yeah, but they've got a goal, so they're going to sit and defend that. I do understand that as well. I'm just a bit concerned by this like whole concept of where we play a half to sort of save ourselves and then like try and win it in the second half. And do you think that was a factor in concentration? Because, again, I thought Dier had a great second half and he was pretty fucking at fault for, well, certainly the second goal. Does this make sense, what we're doing here? I believe that the idea is that we're going to conserve energy. Then when you look at the running stats, like, we're well at the top in terms of running stats. So are we actually conserving energy? I'm not really sure. So it's a confusing thing. I don't know where you sit with it, mate.
I don't know. Is it an admission that Conte's got it wrong in the team selection and the tactical selection, and the fact that the team and the formation he starts with very rarely gets to the hour mark with the same sort of formation and tactics? But, you know, formations evolve throughout games anyway. But it's very high risk. And when you get a team as clinical as Liverpool, who are comfortable having the ball for 90 minutes, we're not comfortable having the ball for 90 minutes. So we can't really be in a situation where, you know, where we can try and contain teams, because we just, I mean, obviously Conte has to build from the back, but I mean, Dier and Davies used to be fullbacks, so they should be better on the ball, but sometimes they look like they look all at sea. But yeah, this whole opening 45 minutes playing rubbish, obviously Conte is there to be questioned. I mean, you know, he's not beyond reproach in terms of how he approaches games. And it's something that I feel a lot of teams are kind of getting a bit wise to, in that, you know, they know they're going to have an onslaught in the second half. Let's get a couple of goals in the first half. It's happened in the last two home games, and it's been the same result, losing 2-1. But I don't know. I mean, Conte's stubborn. He's achieved his objectives, which is, I guess, is get top in the Champions League group and being within being in the hunt for the title, like within 10 points of the team at top. But it's just, I don't know, this whole half thing is a bit stressful, especially in the ground. We're going to touch on probably the boos at half-time as well. I mean, it's easy, you know, going on social media and being objective after the game, saying, you know what, you know, we're still building something, but it's not a relaxing game to watch.
Yeah.
You know, I think I mentioned in the last pod I was on that a lot of Spurs fans need therapy. And I think someone responded to me saying, yeah, but football is therapy. Supporting Tottenham Hotspur is not fucking therapy, mate. It's not therapy. Go out and get some, man. There's some angry motherfuckers out there.
It's what keeps people in therapy. It's what it is.
Oh, yeah.
It's part of the economy that drives people to therapy. So in that way, it is helping. Mark, I can't believe, like, I don't think I've ever seen a team do what we're doing. And for like three or four games, it's like, it's just circumstantial. But this is a thing, isn't it? Like, and to T's point, if it gets to a point where now it is a thing and teams basically know we're not going to attack for the first half, and the bit I don't get is the playing back. We're like actively playing badly, it seems. That I can't get it right. This has got to change, isn't it, after the World Cup? Otherwise, this is insane, a way of playing, which is basically throw the first half and then see how you get on.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think it will as well. I don't think this is a. I don't think this is his strategy for the whole season. But the schedule's been brutal, and this has been his way of dealing with it. So I guess what you've got to do is. I mean, I guess we could do like a sort of a. It's not even a half the season, is it? It's like a third of the season by the time we get to the World Cup, or just over a third. You could sit down and take stock of where it's gotten us to. At the moment, we're still fourth. We're a point behind Newcastle in third. Man U, even if they win their next game, won't get above us into fourth. And we've got a winnable game before the break. So I think it's we have to look at it from a slightly more sort of, well, we have to look back at how it's been rather than how it feels right now. Once we get to the end of the season or the halfway mark, I don't think it's going to be what he sets out to do after the World Cup. Hopefully we get through the World Cup without too many injuries, and we'll see something that's slightly more akin to what we saw at the tail end of last season, where we did play better across the two halves. I do think. I mean, I said this in the preview for the Liverpool game as well. There's definitely something to, I think that's established by now, that we're trying to conserve energy in the first half, but I don't think he sets us out to play this shit. I think he just, and we see it in the first 10 minutes, right? Like, we play decent in the first 10 minutes, and then the players just fucking drop their guts and they lose their heads a little bit. I just don't think they're used to playing, you know, if you're Conte, you're thinking you've got to play pragmatic. You've got to play a little bit cleverer. Don't spend your energy on needless dribbling or chasing after balls, because you are set up a little bit more defensively. So you don't have to chase the ball so much. You've just got to communicate to your partners and they'll help you out. They'll support you if you're caught in a 1v2. So, I don't think he sets out that way. He doesn't want us to play shit, and he doesn't want us to play flat and with no energy. But I think the players may be interpreting it that way, maybe subconsciously, but it's definitely not the way. This is not the way he wants us to play. It's he sets out with a different idea, and then it just ends up that way. But it all kind of comes back to this point. We need better players, man.
I like the idea though that he is going right. First off, play shit. If there's a ball on, smash it to the stand. Take a bad touch when you get time. Like, make sure you take a bad touch. If there's an option to go long, smash it as far as you can. Yeah. Right, he's obviously not saying play shit. I think whatever the instruction is, it is making the players second guess themselves, which is essentially making them play badly. And I think it's clearly a plan. And if the plan is to somehow like muddle through until the World Cup, if you're muddling through and being in the top four, that's done its job. Now, the reason I felt optimistic after this game is that I feel like, okay, cool, they can play well, which I didn't think was possible playing his system. That there is a way to play exciting football, and we saw that we really were like attacking in a really good way. And we also could have had a penalty tee when it was 1-0. So we started quite well, then we conceded. Then we had this penalty incident where the ball gets played into Sessegnon, and then he's in the box. And I mean, I watched it immediately in real time and did the classic football fan thing and just shouted penalty because it's a foul on our player in their box. And I kind of thought, oh, maybe it's a bit soft. Seeing the replay, that's a penalty. Like, it's an easy penalty for me to be given. And we saw it with the Cancelo one that was given like earlier that weekend. That's very similar. Was it a penalty for you, mate? And would that have changed the game?
I mean, I was at the other end of the ground, so it looked a little bit like a shove from where I was. But the Cancelo penalty was soft as well. But it's the consistency that's the issue, not whether or not it was a penalty. It's just that for one game, it won't be a penalty. And for another game in the same weekend, it will or it won't get given. It's just it's a bit shambolic. The players don't know where they stand anymore. And you know, I was a bit harsh on Sessegnon earlier on. You know, Mark pointed out that he got behind Alexander-Arnold a fair bit during the game. And I feel that was frustration on Alexander-Arnold's part because he just kept getting around him. And you know, there was a shove in the back. He didn't make any attempt to go for the ball. And if he was given a penalty and he put it away, that changes the whole complexion of the game. So it is frustrating. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's just the inconsistency that's the most frustrating issue here, not whether or not it was a penalty. I mean, the rule should just be hard and fast, you know. It can't just be a penalty and a sending off on top of that for Cancelo in one game. And then I don't think Alexander-Arnold even got a yellow for that challenge either. So it's fucked up.
Well, if he'd got a yellow, the ref would have been acknowledging that there was foul play, which he didn't even do. The problem with the whole, like you said, it's definitely the inconsistency is the biggest problem. And what's really interesting is the our ref for this game was the VAR ref in the City game. So he actually called the ref. I can't remember who was on the on-pitch ref there, but he called him to the VAR screen and went, called him and said, "Oh, you should look at this because this you know there's a shove in the back. This is definitely a penalty, and it's a red. It's a sending off as well because it's a you know an obvious goal scoring chance." So he does that, and then literally the day after, when he's on the pitch himself, he doesn't see it. Like what the like what like the, that's an even bigger inconsistency. It's just so insane. They had an interesting point on the View from the Lane podcast where they said that he's probably seen the reaction to the red card and the penalty on social media, and then that's in the back of his mind. And I sort of get human nature, you know, plays a trick on you and all that sort of stuff, but that's exactly why the fucking refs shouldn't be in Stockley Park in the VAR box. It's just the whole thing is so insane. It's ridiculous. And sorry if I can answer the question to T as well. I think it definitely would have changed the game. I was scoring a penalty at 20 odd minutes and the game is 1-1 all of a sudden. Liverpool's actually got to try and chase it to try and get the 3 points because they need them a lot more than we do. It changes the whole complexity of that game. I think I'm still pissed off about that penalty. I've just realised now.
Yeah, I am. At the time, I was... I just tweeted immediately. I just don't know what the rules are. And there were multiple incidents of inconsistency in this game alone. There was one where the ball goes up in the air. I can't remember who it was, but essentially like Salah gets caught a little bit on his thigh from like a training leg, goes down, free kick. The exact same thing happens to Kulusevski in the second half, nothing given. There was a Cess incident after the penalty, which was on the edge of the area, where Alexander-Arnold again just does less this time than the one that was the penalty, and we get a free kick. And that's the stuff that just galls me because I'm like, I hate talking about referees because I sort of think they're usually shit for both teams, but you only ever talk and notice about your side of it. But I really felt in this game it was bad. I'm not saying he's like trying to make us lose, but the bad decision definitely fell our way and that was a cause of frustration.
They should be in front of the fucking media, I feel, as well. I mean, that's been mooted that they should explain their decisions, even if, you know, they go fight the press and they make a howler. I feel that their decisions are, you know, they're costing teams money, costing teams league places, costing teams games. I just think that, I mean, I'm not expecting the Spanish Inquisition to be given the third degree about, you know, the previous day and whatever, but I feel that in terms of the decisions for the game, they should be at least asked to explain them, because they might even educate the fans in a way, you know, because there's little, I don't read the rules. I mean, there's probably about 100 bylaws in the latest season's rules, but there should be put in front of the press to explain the decisions. They have to be. Is at that point now?
Yeah. To be honest, I'm at my wit's end with VAR, because I just, if the ref hasn't given it, and then you can see on the replay that it's a penalty, that is a big mistake. And I thought that was the whole point of VAR, is it's supposed to clear up obvious errors on the pitch. The one thing that I always get wrong is the offside thing, which is slightly different. It's not clear and obvious. That's more to just do with, is he off or on? And that has its own bunch of fucking problems, because it's to do with the lines. So, yeah, I think it's shit. I think there aren't many people left who are holding on to VAR is the answer. It's fucking shit and I hate his guts. So there we go. So that didn't help us not getting that penalty and us going in with a bit of a shocking first half performance. We had a question from Frazinho 8814, who asks, how do you get people to stop booing when it's halftime? I get we're not great in the first half at the moment and it's a minority of fans, but it gives Spurs fans a really shit look.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I'm always torn on this subject, because I kind of feel like people can do what they want. If they want to boo, then fucking boo. Like, you pay the money, do what you like. There's loads of things people do in society I don't agree with, but I'll give them the right to do it. But in this instance, you want your team to win. So I don't necessarily feel like that's the best to give them the best chance of winning. Mark, where do you stand on the whole booing at halftime, booing generally for your team versus like cheering them on?
Yeah, I'm not for booing. I think it's silly. I think it's quite childish, if I'm honest. You know, I understand people want to make their opinions felt, but it's just the worst and least intelligent way of doing that. And I'm definitely not a booer. I think yesterday was just perplexing and really actually quite frustrating. As a Spurs fan who goes to games and, you know, I pay my season ticket. I love going to games, but what are these guys? What are these people trying to do? Like, it feels like they're actually starting to fuck things up for us. Like, and Conte mentioned it after the game a couple of times. Like, this, we know this man doesn't need an excuse to get frustrated with the club. So this just doesn't help. You know, what are you booing about? Like, we're behind against a 6-time Champions League winner and recent Premier League champions, Liverpool. Like, stop booing as soon as you're the slightest bit put out by what you're seeing. Like, I tweeted during the game, I was like, it's so silly. Like, you're not helping. Just if you want to help, support the team. If you're pissed off, go out and tell your mates, because you know you're going to go see them either at halftime or afterwards. You're literally not helping. They don't go into the dressing room going, oh, they booed us. Oh, we should probably rethink what we're doing. You know, like, they know. So anyway, I'd, that was probably a bit of a rant, but like, I'm so fed up with it. And like, in first half as well, man, like, the game is not even over. We've got 45 minutes left still. Anyway, sorry, ranting.
T, where are you at with it? Are you a pro-booer or anti-booer?
I'm anti, but I think fans have a right to voice their disapproval. We've got the highest season ticket prices in the country. They probably feel powerless. They can't affect the game. So they've got to let out their frustrations the only way they know how. But anyone who does boo, go home, look at yourself in the mirror booing, look how much of a cunt you see looking back at you when you're booing. So bear that in mind. However, right, as I said, the tickets are expensive, they're frustrated, you know, they're not going to run into the pitch and start clamping players, so they're going to voice their disapproval by booing. I don't think it's an effective means of, you know, getting your point across, because you look at, you know, Davies and Dow are nailed on starters for every game, and I think if we are where we want to be, then they should be nailed on starters for every game. So Conte's still got to pick them. I mean, I'm not saying that these guys are awful players, but I think if we are, I mean, Alderweireld and Vertonghen are better than a pair of them, for example. Oh, gotcha. And we need players on that level to get us to where we want to be. We've got Emerson Royal at right wing back. Okay, the alternative is Matt Doherty, who's not exactly Kyle Walker at his peak. So there's a lot of gaps in the squad that need to be filled. And I think you just have to show a bit of patience, because Conte is still making do, still pretty much making do. I mean, we lucked out in the January window having Kulusevski and Bentancur land in our laps, but there's still going to be trial and error in the transfer window. I mean, over the summer, on this podcast, we were largely happy with the transfer window, but I don't think any of them have lit the world on fire, not in comparison to the January 2 of Kulusevski and Bentancur. No one's been on that level. So it's still a work in progress. I think Pochettino, when he first came and he had these old problematic players, we had a good young group of players coming through. We had Kane. We had Mason and a few other younger players who came in. And you had Danny Rose, who was very much a disaffected player, and Poch found a role for him. And I feel that we just need to give Conte a couple more windows. I don't think booing solves anything, but fans have to be able to voice their frustration somehow. I just think that maybe they could expend that energy to just saying, come on, Spurs, because there's times when we concede a goal and, you know, fans are effing and blinding and whatnot. But then all of a sudden you hear a clap and say, come on, you Spurs, come on, let's get back into it. And that's probably what people would rather hear. But, you know, we can't tone police 58,000 people, ultimately.
I think we need to co-opt it and reclaim its power of the boo. So my pitch is that we play at half times always Sticky featuring Miss Dynamite boo, and then and then it just sounds like everyone's letting off gun fingers like garage skanking in the crowd. And then the players will be like, oh, that's a fucking banger anyway. So maybe they're loving it. They're absolutely loving life. So that's my plan. Sticky, anyone who's responsible for the music at half time at Spurs, boo by Miss Dynamite and Sticky. That's the one.
I saw her performed at an MTV Lick party. I think it was in Huddersfield. The song had just come out back then, so my age a bit. But yeah, it went down really well.
I mean, it's a banger.
You know, Miss Dynamite.
It's a banger.
It is.
It's like one of those tunes that, you know, when people go like, oh, gigs, Talking the Hardest should be like the alternative national anthem. Sticky featuring Miss Dynamite boo would be on my list for potential consideration. Right, let's
that's Jerusalem.
Let's talk about second half, which was much better. One of the big things for me that stood out in this game was Bissouma. I thought he, even in the first half, but particularly second half, he really stood out to me as like, this is the player I remember playing for Brighton that we thought we were going to get. Mark, were you impressed with Bissouma's performance in this game? And has he turned a corner? Marseille and now Liverpool.
I think he's definitely getting there. I think he's getting there. He's this was by far, and there's no surprise to anyone, this was by far his best performance in his Spurs shirt. And he had a decent second half against Marseille. But he was imperious in that midfield. He was one of our three best players on the pitch, I think, with Perisic and Bentancur. But he ran that midfield. He had the most touches out of all of them. I think he shared highest percentage at 91 or 92% success rate. So he was really effective, but he was also incredibly active in the defensive stages. So he was everything we wanted from him. He won his duels. He wasn't afraid to jump into them. I thought it was a much, much, much better performance from him. He doesn't really chip in to attack, which I think is something we might see people start to criticise about him. He's coming into a bit of a Højbjerg career arc here, where he starts out starts out a bit shit and then everyone hates him. And then, I mean, I think people are taking to him a lot quicker than they are Hype, yeah. But you're not really going to see much attacking from him for a little while. He is more of a truest defensive midfielder. But this was his most progressive. He covered the most ground of any game I've seen him play in. This was the Brighton Bissouma that we used to see for Brighton, going, fucking hell, this guy gets around and he sticks a leg in. He's not afraid. He works so hard. He's involved in the short passes and you know, the turnovers and things like that. So, I was really impressed. And he looked good both sort of after the game in terms of highlights and stats and all that, but also just on the pitch. He looked brilliant.
Yeah, he looked good, didn't he, too?
Yeah, and something that Mark kind of alluded to is that he took on the ball even when there were players on him, and the players trusted him. So he's got a couple of players around him. You give Bissouma the ball, you know he's going to emerge with the ball and pass it to a white shirt. I feel that the issue that Spurs had a lot was that there's not players who can take this thing out of the game, hold onto the ball. We had, I feel like I'm talking about 16, 17 season all over again here. But you've got people like Moussa Dembele, who you give the ball to, and you just let him hold on to it, take this thing out of the game, and then, you know, let the team reset, and then you build again. I feel that Bissouma did that in parts yesterday, where he'd have Thiago and a few other midfielders around him, and he'd just get the ball, pirouette, pass it to another white shirt. And I feel that was an underrated part of his game yesterday, because when we're under the cosh, it's good to have players who can, comfortable on the ball, in tight triangles, can still do a little 1-2 here and there and just take this thing out of the game. It was good that it was he chose his best game for that one, because he's someone who's, it was easy to warm to. You look at the training pictures and everyone loves him, and it was definitely a good time for him to have his, you know, best game. I mean, it's probably a shame that he's only probably got maximum 180 minutes left of football before the World Cup. But I feel that after the after the World Cup is over, I feel he'll be a staple in the team. Because obviously, Marley aren't at the World Cup, so you'll have enough time.
Yeah.
I think, you know, another thing that I thought was impressive as well, like, and to you pretty much just said it, but he stepped up for this game. Like, this is a massive game in our calendar. And he was one of the players that actually stepped up. I don't think anyone massively stepped down, but I thought there was players that didn't have a great performance. Even though Kane scored, I thought he looked a little bit on his own, but, you know, he was, because he was the only striker on the pitch. But I thought Perisic stepped up as well, and I thought Bentancur, who I'm sure we'll touch on next, was stepped up massively. We've seen Bentancur do this all season, but for Bissouma to really step up, and we know how good Liverpool's midfield can be. They're on a bit of a bad run at the moment, but Thiago is one of the best midfielders in the world on his day, and I didn't think we saw the Thiago we're used to seeing, and a big part of that was down to Bissouma.
Yeah, I think actually that three in midfield, it did work really well. And I don't, I'm genuinely, what I'm about to say, Mark, I'm genuinely not saying it to wind you up. What I do think that we'll see with this potentially is that Bissouma playing so well in that sitting position and Bentancur playing so well in the sort of box-to-box position, I do worry about longer term, who plays in that, the third. If we play 3-5-2, the third person needs to be more of a, like, maybe a goal threat, right, considering the other two. So if we carry on playing that way, I thought he was really good to Højbjerg yesterday. He was very just sensible. He didn't stand out, but I thought he played really well. But it did kind of occur to me that actually, you're right, Bissouma offers nothing really going forward, but he's so good in that, like, sitting position, and he was excellent at just breaking things up, getting it, and, like you said, little gives and goes, and just keeping things ticking over. He was great there. And Bentancur, I think, I didn't think he was as progressive as he is. Like, he's a very good ball carrier, very good going forward. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. And obviously, again, I'm doing what we always do, which is go, oh, you can only talk about first 11 and not a squad game. And Højbjerg brings a lot when we play the two in there. So I think what it does is it means that we haven't just got Højbjerg and Bentancur. We now have another player who can add something to this squad, which can only be a good thing. Talking of good things, it was nice to see Kulusevski come off the bench and with pretty much within minutes has just showed us what we all thought, which is that fucking hell, we've missed this guy a lot.
Eight yard seconds apparently as well. It was just such a massive lift when he came on. always, since I was a child, a while back, when players come out from like a long-term injury, I think, oh my God, do they remember how to play football? You know, he's singing a couple of stats, like, yeah, he's not lost it at all. And it was so lovely to see him back. And it was good that he got the assist for Kenny. It's a very clever assist. I've got to give props to Doherty for the pre-assist as well. But it was lovely to see Kulusevski back. I think it was nice. It was a home game as well, because it just gave the entire ground a lift, and it changed the game, really. I think there was one, I think before he got the assist, he tried to take it around Van Dijk, and I thought, that's not going to work, mate. But then, in another way, it was a lot more, it's like he saw that, and I thought, okay, I'm not going to take it around Van Dijk in the way that he tried to tap it around one side and run around the other. That's not really going to work. But he tried another way where he just kind of, okay, right, as soon as Van Dijk gets near him, I'm going to tap the ball. It might have been Konate who was near him or Van Dijk, but it's a first touch is going to go straight to Kane, and it resulted in a goal. I just love watching him play. His game intelligence is not as nippy as Richarlison or Sonny, but the way his mind works every time he gets the ball, it's just a beautiful thing to watch. And I just hope that he doesn't get another injury for the rest of the season, because he just makes so much of a difference to our side.
Yeah, he was. He was incredible, like the difference of having him on. And again, this for me, Mark, I think is what was another tick in the box of optimism, which is like we were actually playing well before he came on. And then when you just sprinkle, another fellow ginger Nordsman into the Spurs team, suddenly we just looked even better. So how much of a difference does he make to us, like, going forward, and how good was he in this game?
I like how you just put the ginger Nordsman in there to sort of butt me back up after you slacked off my king and ruler, Pierre-Emile Højbjerg there. That's well done.
Give with one well hand, done. Take with the other. Yeah.
Yeah, you know what you did. Saying that, do you know what? Someone's going to dig out a tweet I probably did about Kulusevski before we signed him, when there was rumours about it. But I'm a huge fan of Kulusevski, not just because he's ginger and Scandinavian. But this game is a perfect reminder of how crucial that guy is to us. We had, excuse me, in I think 20 odd minutes, he had a key pass, a successful cross. He had 16 touches, which is almost half of what Kane had in the whole game. Again, I'm not slagging Kane off, but it's just an example. He was absolutely crucial. And obviously the assist, he was taking players on in a way that I don't really see many other of our players do. Like he's so confident for a man who's 22 years old. He's so confident in taking on his defenders in front of him. I love watching him play, and you could see how everyone got a lift as well. Kane all of a sudden is 10 yards further up because he knows he's got some support in creating from midfield. That's one of the definitions of really great players, is they lift the team around them. Yeah. And Kulusevski is starting to do that for us. I don't want to, like, we do also do this. I just want to temper this with the whole, you know, Spurs fans, we're very quick as soon as a player is out injured, we muse about, oh my God, this player is so important to us. And Skip is a great example, right? We're like, oh my God, Skip's the best midfielder in the world. When he comes back, he's going to change everything. Højbjerg's out, Bentancur's out, Skip's back. Like, but Kulusevski is that. Like, he genuinely is. He's so fucking important to us. And it's so good to get him back. And I hope he plays. I'm not sure if I want him to play against Forest. I think we should have enough. But maybe comes on second half, but he should play against Leeds. He should start against Leeds because we need to get these last 3 points in the bag before the break.
Yeah, and I guess he's not going to the World Cup, so just get some minutes in his legs. And
yeah, exactly.
Ben Foreman asks, despite the result, was the second half the most entertaining you've been watching Spurs this season? I can answer that very quickly. Yes. T, what do you think?
I guess it was. I missed a bunch of games at the start of the season. One of them was the Leicester 6-2, and that was an entertaining second half. But I feel that yesterday just showed that, and something I've said for the last 8-9 years, that we can go against any team and give them trouble. And okay, Liverpool are in what? Then I can't see that far down the league. Are they 8th or 9th or 7th, whatever the fuck they are? But they're still Liverpool, you know what I mean? And we made them look ordinary for very long spells. And I'm very high on Conte, and I think that it's not so much that the football is born, it's just that when certain parts of the machination, when certain parts of the machine just don't go how you want it to go, it just looks fucking dreadful and pedestrian. Yeah. But the second half yesterday was great to watch, and it's just a shame that it's a game that we lost. I don't like to eulogise over games that we lost, saying, oh, you know, that we played well, like with some plucky promoted side. You know, we can't lose games and be happy about it. But I enjoyed the second half, and I sincerely hope that from Boxing Day onwards, that second half is the first half of most of our games. We're just battering teams, and then, you know, after the 70-minute mark, we rest our best players and put the second string on. That's what I'd rather see, other than seeing, you know, first team players come on in the second half to salvage a game, which is what Kulusevski almost did.
How about you, Mark? Where do you think we're at?
Would this be go on.
Yeah, no, go on. Just where you think we're at in terms of this being the most exciting half of football, and where does this leave us going forward?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's up there. Like T said, it's always nicer when the performances are, you know, when you're rewarded at the end of it. But look at it, there was lots and lots of positives. I think we've covered a lot of them already, but I thought there was a lot of really big individual, and I thought, and also if I can just give a response to your Hybia slagging off just before, because I do again want to be positive about Bentancur, and I think, do you know what, I think you're right. If we're going to play a three-man midfield, and I've said this before, we need some attacking, some goal threats. Hybia and Bentancur are now going to be, well, but at the end of the season, I reckon they'll be about similar in terms of goals scored and assists and all that sort of stuff. But what Bentancur does offer, that Højbjerg doesn't offer, is an incredible emerging ability to dribble. We saw a few sort of just amazing little dribbles in his. Yeah, if the man had half our total completed dribbles in that whole game, he had 4 dribbles out of 8 for the whole team. He's emerging as some sort of, I mean, he is the Dembele, the new Dembele. Like he just is. He's becoming Dembele that player region. For us. He is, yeah. It's brilliant, you know. So yeah. Look, if this is the game that solidifies Bentancur as two of the three we're going to be playing midfield after the January and summer transfer window, and Højbjerg goes on the bench, that's fine. That's probably as big a praise as I can give Bentancur, isn't it?
Yeah. For the record, I don't think Højbjerg will be on the bench for some time, and.
I don't think so either.
He's been one of our best players this season. I just making the point. It suddenly occurred to me, actually, that what we need is at least competition. It shouldn't be a no brainer, and it currently is a no brainer that he has to play every game because he is, you know, our best, if not arguably one of our best midfielders. It's just nice that we've got some competition in there, which is really good.
Yeah.
All right, I think that's enough about Liverpool. I just want to a couple more different topics just while we're together. It's been 1 year of Conte, so I thought it'd be useful just to see how we would summarise his tenure so far. We had a question which maybe could just tie it together, T. Fipit Lyric, I think I've got that correct, asks, do we think Conte will be given what he needs this season for the following? 1, to get top 4, 2, to challenge for at least 1 trophy, to sign a long-term contract and get Kane to also commit to a new deal. So what do we think of Conte's tenure so far, and what does he need to do this year, T? What does he need to be able to, like, actually be successful this season?
Fairly happy with his tenure so far. I prefer to think about how he ended last season, you know, with the Everton Newcastle performances at White Hart Lane, smashing up Norwich in the last day of the season, beating Arsenal at home last year, April or May, I think it was. I think it's largely positive. He hates losing, but he's in a situation where, you know, the boogeyman's name again, Pochettino, said many moons ago, there's going to be a painful rebuild, and we're in the midst of it. Mm. We're in the midst of the rebuild. That window, the 2019 window, his last window, we signed Ndombele, Lo Celso, Sessegnon and Jack Clark. And I came out of that window very, very happy. I thought, we're going to do well there. I mean, Jack Clark probably get loaned out, but the three other players, I thought they were going to do really well. And it turns out that Sessegnon's getting more games, but he's not having the last thing is he's not playing very well. Undombele and Lo Celso are loaned out, and they're not doing that well where they've been loaned out. And I think Jack Clark's been sold now, isn't he, to Sunderland. So we're in the midst of a rebuild. Conte's got to oversee it. His reputation is one of winning trophies everywhere he goes. And I think all things considered, we've got to consider that we are top of the Champions League group. We're going to be in the top four. And I can't see the club not backing him in the next few windows. I think him and Paratici are, you know, a good pairing. I think Paratici knows what Conte wants. There's, I mean, even a window before Conte joined, we had, there's a bunch of players there who probably, a lot of them probably need to go. They've got Brian Heal, who I don't think is a Conte sort of player. Emerson Royale, even though Conte always darts him, I don't think that's someone who Conte would have necessarily signed in terms of his attributes as a right wing back. So there's an awful lot of work to do. We've got Tanganga and Sanchez still in our books, and I think the majority of our fans surely would balk at seeing either of those two start in a game. And we're only a couple of injuries where we've seen them two start a run of games. So there's a lot of work to be done, and I think Conte's a bloke to carry it through, but I don't think we're at our final form by a long shot right now. But the year has been great. As for a trophy, I think a trophy is a bonus more than a necessity this season. It would be nice. We're definitely good enough to win a trophy. The teams have won a trophy in the last 14 years who we are considerably better than. So it would be nice. I think a trophy is just an award for... Because Lloris is probably in his testimonial season now and he's not won a trophy. I think for players like Hugo Lloris, Heung-min Son, who have been at Spurs a while, it would be lovely to see them lift a trophy in our colours. And, you know... And also, the way things are, I think Kane will sign that contract, but it would be nice if he signed a contract, having lifted a trophy.
Yeah, always softens the blow. Mark, where are you at with Conte, like, for his first year? And what's he got to do this year to be successful?
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah, I think T said most of it there. Thanks, T, for taking the bread out of my mouth. It's literally all that T said. I totally agree with all of it. I think he's done really well. I think he had a tough task when he came in. I mean, you look at some of the dross, absolute dross, and look, most of it is still out on loan. Let's not forget, we've got Joe Roden and Harry Winks and Lo Celso and Ndombele coming back. Alfie Whiteman as well, I think, still on loan. So there's a lot of players, and he you know, he's just kind of postponed that a little bit, or Paratici has. So there's still work to do, but in terms of the players he's brought in, I mean, there has been, as much as some fans, I don't think, want to maybe recognise it, but there has been an immediate impact from a lot of the players that he's brought in. You think of Perisic, Bissouma, Longley and Richarlison. At least, if you're not fans of those players and you're like, they're shit, they've given us depth, they've given us options, rather than the tossers we had there. That's a bit harsh, but, you know, I don't mean that. Rather, the players we had to sup with. So, look, there's still plenty of work to do, but you can only be satisfied with what he's done for us. You got us top four over Arsenal last season, and this season we're still in the top four as well. So, like, yeah, you can only be happy with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's completely fair. I mean, I think I've been pretty vocal about that. I haven't to date enjoyed the football, that I back the guy to be the guy that's going to get us to where we want to get to. And, you know, I think the reason for that is all the reasons that you've given, right? There's a long way to go before he can actually formulate the team to play in the way that he wants to play to get the results, and to do it in a fashion that is more appealing on the eye. So he's only, you know, he's limited by the tools that he's got at his disposal. And also time. Like, football now is so immediate. He's only been here 1 year, and there's a raft of managers. Pep, Klopp, took multiple seasons to win trophies with teams now who were like, they're just, you know, they're elite teams with amazing players. It took Pep a little while to win the league. It took, you know, Klopp a couple of seasons to get that Liverpool squad into the shape they wanted and mould it into the way that he's going.
It was four seasons for Klopp. It took 4 years to do anything. They were fucking trash for the first two of them.
There you go. And now people are sort of losing their minds about, you know, what the Scum are doing. It's like, but again, that's taken them years to get to this point of going, we need to get rid of him. He's not good enough. Back him. They back him. Oh, he's still not good enough. And now they're starting to be in a position where they're looking better, right? We've only been 1 year into this project. The signs have been pretty good in terms of the recruitment so far. You know, if you look forward to next year, let's assume that Jed Spence hasn't got some sort of problem with him that it means he actually can't play football and the club are just covering it up. He's actually a good footballer and Conte wants to develop him and he sees him as a young prospect who he wants to develop. Next season, we should hopefully see him at least be rotated in. We've got Destiny coming next year, who's ripping it up in Serie A. Same thing, right? Maybe there's a bit of time for him to develop and get used to the way. But that's two really exciting young prospects. We're definitely going to do some business at centre-back. So again, like we had some quality there. We definitely need an attacking midfielder. So that will be an exciting change. And we've seen when we lost Kulusevski how much of a big issue that caused to our squad. We need another couple probably of those sort of attacking players. I mean, City have a raft of them to be able to call upon. The best clubs have multiple players that can play in those positions to really like help. That's what we're missing, and that does take time and a lot of investment. So I think we just, all of us, whether like me, you're not like head over heels in love with the football right now, or you're really invested. Either way, the same thing applies, which is we've got to give someone a good run at it. This guy's CV and what he's achieved in the game and what we've already seen, like with some of the performances and results that he's managed to get, he's the guy. Like, we have to give him that time. So let's see what happens. I think this year, if we can consolidate Champions League, go far in that competition, would be great. If you manage to pick up an FA Cup or a League Cup, that'd be great. So that takes me forward. Just two more topics before we go, just very quickly. I just mentioned there, we're picking up a trophy. We're actually playing the Carabao Cup this week. Did anyone remember that? Did anyone just... I completely forgot about it until literally 5 minutes before the pod. We're playing Forest away at the Carabao Cup on Wednesday.
Yeah, I'm going.
He's going. Jeez.
Well,
let me ask you then, Mike. should we try and win the Carabao Cup? Because isn't it like you can basically be in the final by January? And it feels like no one's going to give a shit about it because of the World Cup. Or do we just chuck in a load of youngsters and see what happens? What are we going to do?
Well, isn't this the one that City's won like 5 years in a row and they just fucking love it because they can essentially Pep looks at the Carabao Cup and just go EFL Cup and just goes, oh, this is a great chance to test out my squad depth and my bench, because he just plays a total second string 11 and still just wins it at canter. So, I mean... Look, Pep is being he's being pushed in the league for the first time in a while. So maybe that's our window. Like, fuck it. Like, look, we're Tottenham Hotspur. We can't be snobbish about winning trophies and that. As long as it doesn't have a detrimental impact on us getting top four, I'm all for it. Fucking go for it. And look, we'll probably see Jed Spence. So
yes, finally, there's only one thing I want in this world is to see Jed Spence play for Tottenham. I don't even know if he's any good. I'm just so committed now to the idea that he should play.
I love it. It's just, everyone's just doubling down.
I'm obsessed. I'm obsessed. Until he starts playing games, I'm just going to basically think of him as Cafu. And that's how outraged I am. I'm sitting there going, we've got Cafu on bench. He's not fucking bringing him up. Peak Cafu's been pied up. Emerson Royale, I'm fuming. That's how personal I'm taking it, because I just said he should play and now I'm doubling down. T, do you give a shit about the League Cup? Do you want us to just play with the kids? Where are you at with this one?
I've long said that the League Cup should be scrapped. Having said that, I would fucking love it if we won it. It's the last trophy that we've won. But because of the World Cup, you know, for all of us, it was, if the Carabao Cup was when it was supposed to be and not in the fucking middle of November, then we would have seen the likes of Jed Spence and even Saar, who probably wouldn't have got a game anyway, see a bit more of them and have a bit more of them, you know, see what they're about. The annoyance that the Carabao Cup is now is that Jed Spence has been there for 2 months and we've barely seen him. So it would be nice to see him. I think he's got a start and I imagine he will start. And we don't need that many games to win it. And yeah, we should definitely go for it. Absolutely. I just think either scrap it or at least the absolute minimum, make the semi-final one leg. That two-legged bollocks is a waste of time in January, especially when you've got the FA Cup games to contend with. But no, absolutely, if we should go for it. I don't think we're going to games intending to lose, but I think, you know, we'll probably see Spence and Saar start the game, and that should be enough to get us through this round.
Yeah. Talking of, this will be the last thing, and then we'll leave it for today. Talking of trophies, I'd fancy winning this. This would make me slightly happy. The Champions League, the draw we got was AC Milan. Obviously, a bit flashbacks to the epic win in San Siro back in 2012. Different side, different times. We were very new to the Champions League at that point. They were the big European powerhouse. They still remain the European powerhouse, but the gap between the two teams is. And even to some extent, we may have kind of exceeded them in terms of where people see the quality of our squad. What are your thoughts, Mark? Are you happy with this as a draw for the Champions League? Do you think we can get through this tie? I think the tie, is next year after the World Cup. But do you think we're going to get through this tie? How confident are you?
Yeah, I mean, well, it's hard to say now. Like, it's not until February. But it's I think it's a really good option for us. Milan are like they're a good level for us. They're not terrible, obviously. They wouldn't have got to the last 16, but they're not the strongest side either in there. They've got some really good talent, some young players coming through. Everyone's losing their shit over Rafa Leão, new Portuguese hotshot, who does look absolutely outstanding. So it'll be just see him play live. So, you know, but I think we can get through. I think we've got a really good chance. Conte's obviously going to know AC Milan inside out. So that's a massive bonus for us. A lot of people are saying that the same is true about Milan versus Conte, but he's a different beast, every club he's been at. I think it'll be really interesting, and I think it'll be a good matchup for us. And sadly, I won't have a chance to go to the away game, but I'll be there for the home game, and I'm looking forward to seeing some of this, some of these new talents. They've got, apparently, I spoke to one of my Hurdy mates today. He's not on my radar, but their keeper, Mike Maignan, is a really, really very good French keeper as well. And obviously,
he's
they've got
a World Cup.
He is, he's injured, so real shame. So it looks like Lloris will be playing a lot. Obviously, Giroud plays for them. Tomori, ex-Chelsea, plays for them. So there's a bit of a UK vibe going on there as well.
Yeah, we don't give a fuck about AC Milan. We're going to smash them up, aren't we?
Fucking hope so. But it's a sign of how far we've come that we're drawing teams we've got a little bit of a recent history against. You get these probability little matrixes that come up when the first round is over, and you see you can draw. And we had, I think it was either Inter Milan, AC Milan, or Dortmund, teams who have played already.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you know, been in Champions League so long now that it's like, oh, we've played them already, been there, done that. I went to the San Siro back in 2010, the Bell hat trick, so I'm not dying to go back to the game in February. The police treat us like fucking shit anyway, so. Not in a rush to go back to Europe, but it's a nice draw. I think we're two well-matched teams. There was a fear of us getting PSG, and I think that hopefully gets postponed for another round. I don't think we've drawn them yet in Europe, so it would be nice for us to see Messi in action again in the flesh, but it's a good draw. It's a winnable game from the little I know about AC Milan, and as I said on Twitter, hopefully we'll have a couple of new signings then who are eligible and good enough to make an impact.
Yeah, for sure. I'm really happy with the draw. I realised watching the Marseille game and when Højbjerg's goal went in, I am all in on the Champions League. It's my favourite thing about football. By some way, like I basically have realised that the Premier League is almost impossible to win now. Like, and it's going to get harder. The Champions League is obviously the elite competition, but in some ways, because it's a knockout competition. There's more chance of, I mean, we saw it with ourselves getting to a final. You can do that just as a one-off. I appreciate that Real Madrid just win it every year now, but there are teams who can get that far, and we have enough sort of quality and also experience now where I don't think it's out of the realms. So I'm not saying this season, but as long as we get a favourable draw, I'm past the point of I want big teams because it's nice for Spurs to play against big teams. I want to go as far as we can and see where it takes us because I want us to win the Champions League. So we shall see. All right, boys, I think that's enough for us. Been a pleasure, T. Thanks so much.
Cheers.
Absolutely, Nesbitt, a.k.a. Matt Nasbat, a.k.a.
Matt Nasbat. Shagger.
Thanks, mate. Been a pleasure. And
thank you.
Yeah, peace. Speak to y'all soon. Come on, you Spurs.
Up the Spurs.
Network. Lucky Land Casino asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.